Well, with Wisconsin's beautiful lakes and rivers, our state is really a boater's paradise. And today we're going to be talking about what you can do to stay safe while you're enjoying those natural resources. I'm Jill Nadeau. This is the Larry Mueller Show, and we're going to talk about boater safety today. Our guest is Lieutenant Darren Kuhn. He is with us for the rest of the show. He's the Boating Law Administrator in the Division of Public Safety and Resource Protection for the Wisconsin DNR. Whew, got to put that on your door, Darren.
Yeah, that's a mouthful.
It is. Have you taken a boating safety course? What tips did you take away from it? What do you want to do to make sure that your riders are safe in your boat? We always want you to join the conversation. Our number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So we were just talking earlier about water getting into our homes because we've had so much rain. So our lakes and streams were extremely high this year. Are they still in pretty high conditions?
You know, there's some that are higher than others. A lot of our major river systems have gotten back down to normal water levels or close there too, just for the fact that it's been a little while since we have had rain. And a lot of those are controlled by some dams that can allow different variations of flow and get the water levels down. But it was definitely a dangerous situation there for a while, on especially the Mississippi, portions of the Wisconsin River, St. Croix River, and the Minnesota border. It was crazy for a while.
Yeah, I would imagine. So what are some of the dangers that come along with those high waters?
Well, especially with the river systems, with the high waters generally means a lot more runoff, which means a lot more current going through. And currents vary from throughout the water table. So if the current is where you're at, where your boat is, but if you go into the water underneath that, you might have some undertows and different current speeds. Also, you've got a lot of stuff, you know, debris that gets washed out. You know, a lot of this comes from storms. A lot of it comes from down branches, you know, maybe some rotten trees that broke off. Well, all that stuff floats down river. Gets waterlogged, gets semi-submerged, so it doesn't go to the bottom. It just sort of hang in there, and you can either hit it with your boat, or especially nighttime operation becomes extremely dangerous on these flooded river systems where you just can't see stuff. So we've always tell people that if you're going to go out in those conditions, which isn't wise to begin with, slow down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whether it's day or night, just slow down. Nothing is worth going that fast. Wisconsin River in particular, with all the sandbars that are there one day and not the next.
Right.
You really have to be cautious.
Mm-hmm. So legally, let's talk about some of the rules here. Who can operate a boat with a motor in Wisconsin?
Well, that is a loaded question. Is what that is. Generally speaking, somebody that's 12 years old that has had a boater safety class can do it.
Mm-hmm.
There are some exceptions to that rule of parental consent, parental supervision that applies to motor boats but doesn't apply to personal watercraft, the jet skis. And then with boater safety, anyone born after January 1st, 1989 is required to have a boater safety class before they can operate. So you've got that young crowd that can get boater safety right away. But boy, you do the math, 1989, that's a long time ago. That's a while. So a lot of people think that once they have their driver's license for a car, they can legally drive a boat without boater education, and that's just not the case. So anyone after January 1st, 1989 is required to have a boater safety class, unless they're that juvenile age, that parental consent can go. But once you're, say, 18, that parental consent doesn't so much exist so much.
Sure, sure. So where do you get this training?
What I would suggest is go to our website and just type in the search box, boater education. We have a number of different options.
Mm-hmm.
There's some in-person classes that meet like once a week for like 3 weeks or for a couple hours at a time. Otherwise, we have a number of different online options, which you can link right to from our website, that work at your own pace. Yeah, you know, if you want to take a break or you're done for the day, just come back to it wherever. And the website has all that information. But yeah, boater education, type it in the search box on the website, and that will take you right to the page.
And you're talking about the Wisconsin DNR website?
Wisconsin DNR, yep.
Okay. There's so much information in that website. It's ridiculous, really.
A lot of times I find when I go to the public-facing side of it is rather than trying to tab through, just type what you're looking for in the search bar. It's a lot easier because there is a ton of information out there.
There is, and the search bar actually works really well. I've done it myself, so not bad. What kind of things are people going to learn when they take these courses?
A lot of it is the rules of the road, if you will. What boat has the right of way as compared to which boat doesn't, and when it comes to crossing or passing, you know, we don't have lines on the waterway, so you got to know what the rules are as far as who is to stand on and who's got the right of way. Boat lights is a big one where all these boats come with them, but boaters don't understand that the red light means one thing and the green light means another thing, and they're on the specific sides of the boat for a particular reason. That's boater education. What to do in emergency situations. If you do have a capsizing incident, God forbid, or what you're taking on water, some stuff like that, basic safety, some first aid. By no means are you going to become an expert boater or a doctor by taking boater education. But if somebody gets a cut in the boat, some basic first aid on how to control that bleeding, how to keep yourself afloat if you do go overboard. And it's pretty much it. It's not a whole lot of rules based. There is, you know, a law section, obviously, because you need to know what's legal and what's not. But it's more general boating knowledge so that you don't necessarily become that obstruction in the navigable waterways.
Right.
That, you know what you're doing or what you're supposed to be doing. And just safety messages of don't operate faster than you feel is safe, since there aren't really speed limits for the most part on our waterways. That it's just good safety messaging. And as far as becoming that expert boat operator, that only comes with stick time. You got to get out and practice and drive a boat. And then by the end of winter, you got to relearn it again because you forgot.
Yeah, sure. And a lot of it, too, I would imagine, is things that you probably never even thought about before. But now you've taken the course and now you're aware of it.
There's some. I mean, the one thing that when I first took boater education long ago when I was a kid, they talked about locks and dams and how to navigate through a lock and dam. Well, that meant nothing to me growing up in the central part of the state where they didn't exist. Well, now I come to Green Bay area and the Fox Valley where we have a ton of locks and dams. It's like, oh, now I see what you're talking about. But yeah, there's some stuff in there that might not necessarily apply to every area of the state as far as boating, but it's a good course. Mm-hmm. And what's nice about it is if you were to vacation somewhere else within the country, Wisconsin boater education is honored in any other state in the country too. So if you say you want to vacation in Florida and rent a boat, Florida is going to say, do you have boater education? And you're going to say, I do, from Wisconsin. And they're gonna, all right, we're good.
You get a certificate?
Yep.
Or
you'll get a card similar to like you would for hunter education or ATV safety. Any of those safety courses will come with a card that you would just have to show if you were on vacation renting boat somewhere.
Great. We got an email from Mark. He's wondering that if you put an electric trolling motor on your square stern canoe, does it become a motorboat?
It does. Our rules don't differentiate between a trolling motor or outboard motors or jet drives or gas or electric. It really is irrelevant. A motor is a motor is a motor. So as soon as you put on a motor on your canoe, I've seen them on paddle boats, putting motors on those then become motorboats, and then the motorboat rules apply as compared to the manual propelled registration, boat lights at night, multiple different things.
Sure. Is there a cost to the training, by the way?
It varies. Off the top of my head, I don't know exactly. I think it's $10 for the in-person and somewhere around $30 for the online. But there is a cost.
Mm-hmm.
It's just our boating education program is pretty much self-funded. So what we get into the education pot through the fees pays for the manual and the maintenance of the records and everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, something to keep the boat floating, if you will. And everything costs a little bit.
It certainly does. Let's start out with some basic safety tips that really every boater should be aware of.
The one that I always make note of for a number of reasons, is life jackets. 80% nationally of boating fatalities are drownings, life jacket related. Last season, we had 28 boating fatalities, 27 were drownings. We continue to see boats not wearing their life jacket, but not having them with them. There's not enough life jackets on board, which is really, honestly and bluntly, inexcusable. I mean, life jackets nowadays are readily available at any of your big box stores or your sports type stores. And they're not expensive. They're really not. You can buy a 3-pack for $30. Mm-hmm. And if it means saving a life, that it's worth it. We also have 100+ loaner life jacket stations around the state at different boat landings, where if you realize you have a guest that you don't have enough life jackets for that you weren't planning on, a lot of our boat landings will have loaner life jacket stations right there. Borrow one, use it for the day, and all we ask is you return it. And they're all over the state.
I had no clue. That's great.
Yeah.
So how do you find them?
A lot of them are advertised locally. If you went to the individual, if you type in, go to Google, whatever search engine, mm-hmm. type in your normal, your lake, and it will come up with a bunch of different links to that particular lake. And a lot of times on some of the forward facing sites, it will say loaner life jacket station right there. The counties generally will put that on the county park ones.
Okay.
Otherwise, we do have a map, but we have so many of these popping up, it's hard to keep updated because they pop up on a regular basis.
Sure.
And we fund them and partner with different organizations like scouting groups or different school NHS programs where they mm-hmm. need some volunteer hours, Kiwanis groups, stuff like that. So a lot of the times, if you're familiar with a lake, you'll see it right next to the launch. It'll be a brown box with some logos and a bunch of life jackets hanging off of it.
That's great. Yeah. And like you said, there's really no excuse now. It's really there. We're talking about boating safety with Lieutenant Darren Kuhn. He's a boating law administrator in the Division of Public Safety and Rescue Protection for the Wisconsin DNR. Do you have some questions for him? Our lines are open, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Hope you could join us again tomorrow for Garden Talk. We're going to be learning about creating a bird-friendly garden. And then we're also going to talk about ground cover. It's a revolution, apparently. That's tomorrow starting at 11. But right now we are talking about a boater safety. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the basic safety tips. Once we get past those, what are they called? Personal flotation devices, PFDs, right?
Yep.
And they're so much more comfortable now than they used to be.
100%. I mean, growing up, I remember my parents, wear your life jacket, and we had these orange horse collars. They worked, and they still work, and they're still out there. But let's be honest, no one is going to wear them on a 90-degree day all day on the water.
Yeah.
But yeah, the options out there now are pretty much endless, where you have inflatable life jackets that are sort of like a horse collar where you just put them on and they'll automatically inflate if you go in the water. We have the ski vest types that are come in multitude of colors and fashion sense kind of thing. We have float coats that are, you know, maybe more for the fall or early spring activities where it's an insulated jacket with flotation. Even for the paddle sports now, we have ultimately what I refer to as a fanny pack. It buckles around your waist, and it's a Coast Guard certified life jacket, PFD, where when it goes off, you literally just put it up over your neck and it doesn't get in the way of your paddling if you're standing up on your paddle board or cruising through the water with your kayak.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, every color of the rainbow, every shape to fit any body size, and pretty much, you know, specialized for what activity you're doing. And not that it matters as much as the people, but for your pets too.
Yes.
there's approved PFTs for pets. So if your friendly dog is coming with you and can't swim, there you go.
Even if they can swim, it's a good idea because they're dogs. you know, they're going to jump off. So what are the things that people tend to overlook when they're out there boating?
You know, a lot of times people will overlook the drinking. Mm-hmm. And you know, this the same message that we preach with cars and trucks, highways, is don't drink and drive, have a sober driver or a sober captain in the boating world. But what people overlook is how alcohol affects them when they're out in the environment, where what might be a safe limit for something sitting at a restaurant with at dinner or at the kitchen table is not going to be the same as if you're out on the boat with the sun beating down on you all day, the wind, the wave action, all that helps with the alcohol impairment. And it's what might be safe at home isn't going to be safe on the water. And most of the time, it's not people that necessarily have alcohol problems that we're dealing with. It's the, well, I had a few beers at, you know, playing, tossing the football around on the sandbar, and it hit them a lot harder than it meant to. Nonetheless, you know, alcohol and boating, if you think about our reaction times and how we're used to driving a car, well, all the safety features that we have on our cars, we have seatbelts and airbags and brakes, you know, and boats, you know, they don't have any of that. You know, there's no brakes, there's no airbags, there's no seatbelts, there's no lines on the road to keep you where you're supposed to be going. So you really need all your faculties when you're operating a boat. It's a great sport. It's used for fishing and hunting and boating just for fun. But we really need to be responsible with that. And we really encourage people to leave the alcohol at the dock, leave it till you get home. Just be mindful of that, because it's really affecting everyone. And then we take it a step further. A lot of times in Wisconsin, our boat operators trailer their boats. So if they've become impaired on the water and they safely make it back to the landing, well, now you're putting another user group in danger when you're trailering your boat back home. Mm-hmm. And alcohol impairment while pulling a trailer complicates things to that nth degree. So, I mean, it's really a domino effect that is so preventable of just leave it at home.
That's a great point. Because really, you don't think about that. You're like, well, I can, you know, drink this at when I'm sitting at the bar without a problem. Yeah, it's a little bit different.
It is.
In that same vein, Edward in the Northwoods emailed us asking, do alcohol-related tickets and fines connect to your driver's license like an OWI?
At this point in time, they do not. So because you don't need a driver's license to operate a boat, if you were to be arrested for an operating while intoxicated in the boat, it does not affect your driver's license. It does not go on your driving record. It does not go towards points or anything relating to the automobiles. Not to say in the future that might change, because there has been pushes for that in the past. But at this point in time, and there's nothing in current legislation or current proposals to change it, but it has been proposed in the past.
Do you think that would be an incentive if that happened for people to not drink on the lakes?
I think it would be an incentive. In some states, they do have that, and they have fewer incidents. But agreeing the fact that, you know, trying to affect a driver's license when you're not required to have a driver's license and the laws that we have in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, it definitely would be a deterrent.
Mm-hmm. But complicated to get there.
Kind of very complicated to get there.
So what kind of safety equipment should we have on a boat? And is it different for the type of boat that you have?
You know, some of it is different. So by law, any boat over 16 feet or greater is required to have a throwable type personal flotation device, your typical seat cushion or ring buoy. That's pretty standard across boating. Every boat is required to have a wearable type personal flotation device for everybody that's on board. Some of the safety features that we do overlook is our engine cutoff switches. And for people listening, what I'm talking about is that curly red cord that has a little hook that connects to your throttle assembly. What that's designed to do is if you pull that cord away from the throttle assembly, it turns off your motor. And what we're starting to see in Wisconsin, an uptick a little bit, but nationwide, we're starting to see an uptick of people falling or hitting a wave and getting taken away from the console. Well, if that's the case, you've got a boat continuing to go, because it's not like a car where your foot's not on the gas. When you push the throttle handle forward, you're going. And if you're not driving, no one's driving, and we got a, you know, 10,000 pound rockets, you know, unoccupied going through the water. Mm-hmm. With that kill switch, it turns the motor off. It just comes to a gentle calming stop. And if you fell overboard, you can get back to your boat, get back in it and resume. If you just fell off the driver's seat, you clip back on and go. In Wisconsin, the only people that are required to wear that are personal watercraft, are jet ski operators. But every boat pretty much has one now. Mm-hmm. If you don't like the confines of the cord, there are commercial options out there for electronic, where if the fob gets wet or the fob breaks a Bluetooth signal, it will do the same thing. Those obviously are, you know, more expensive than just the cord that hooks in. But yeah, a lot of times you forget to unhook that cord and you turn off your motor accidentally, but it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, just plug it right back in. I mean, exactly. Treadmills have them, for heaven's sake. So, yeah, you can hurt more people with a boat than you can a treadmill.
Well, and if you think about it, too, is you know, you get out there, and if you don't have an operator and the boat just keeps going, how are you going to stop it? I mean, mm-hmm. you're literally going to have somebody jump in from one boat to the other boat at whatever speed they're going. And it definitely becomes a dangerous situation, and even worse if you're on a you know, a populated lake like most of our Wisconsin lakes are. There's not a whole lot of lakefront property left vacant out there, and can just imagine the dangers if that went into a swim area or something.
Oh, yes, definitely. That's a great idea. We did get an email from Amy in Milwaukee. She was talking about, we had talked about earlier about life jackets for dogs, which, mm-hmm. like we said, it's a good idea. But she's wondering, do human life jackets become out of date?
Human life jackets do not become out of date, but they can become unserviceable. And what I mean by that is over a lifetime, depending how the life jacket is treated, anything that's got cuts or tears in it is going to affect the serviceability of the life jacket. The straps, you know, if you leave them out in the environment, you know, all season, and they just sit around strapped to the back of a boat seat or something, the straps could get rotten, and that makes them unserviceable. Outgrowing them, their sizes. I mean, there's a number of different sizes for children, and then there's adult sizes at your typical large, extra large. So my recommendation would be just look at them, as your previous guest said, with the house inspections, look at them annually. Mm-hmm. Just take a look at the beginning of boating season. Make sure the straps are still good. Make sure that there aren't any tears that you didn't know about. Make sure they're the right size. As you know, as kids get bigger, their life jackets have to get bigger, just like their clothes and their shoes. Mm-hmm. You got to have an appropriate size life jacket for the person that it's for. And it could be 100 years old if you maintain them. Otherwise, if you don't really maintain them and they get all moldy and gross, they may become unserviceable. But ultimately, there's no expiration date.
And how do you know if it's too small or too big for you?
There'll be a label printed on the inside. It's either going to be printed on or it's going to be stitched on, one of the two. And it will have a chest size generally, and will generally have a weight of up to 90 pounds or triple XL chest size of this or mm-hmm. something along those lines. So there'll be a size on there that has a weight and a chest size that people should be able to figure that out.
Great. Yeah, I didn't realize that. I guess I never looked, but that makes total sense. I love that. So, and we were talking about safety equipment in the boat. We're talking about anything else that you
would
suggest?
Oh, we could go on for hours.
No.
check.
We've got 4 minutes.
Yeah, check your boat lights. Okay. A lot of times when we are working nights and we make contacts because of a boat light violation, they didn't check them before they went. They just relied on that they were going to work. Mm-hmm. I suggest, even if you're going out in the morning, just plug them in quick and just do a quick check to make sure they're there. That way you know, okay, well, I've got to be off the water by sunset. Because once sunset comes and your lights are required, it's a little late to figure out that they're not going to work now. They're not necessarily as reliable as your car headlights, where you just assume they're going to work. Mm-hmm. And the excuse, well, I just turned them on and they didn't work, doesn't really mean that you get to stay efficient.
Right.
You got to come in.
Yeah. You're going to be accountable for that.
Correct.
So, do you have a lot of officers out there patrolling? Do we need more? Always.
Always. I mean, the work never stops.
Yeah.
And with our staff, we have about 200 or so field staff.
That's it for all of our...
For all of Wisconsin.
Whoa, you are definitely understaffed.
Well, and you mix in the fact that boating season is also state park season.
Yeah.
It's also ATV season and all of the different stuff that goes on with summer. Yeah, we could use another couple hundred, but I think we do a pretty good job with what we have.
Well, thank you for being out there for us. We do appreciate that. And thank you for coming in and sharing your wisdom with us.
Absolutely.
We've been talking with Lieutenant Darren Kuhn. He's Boating Law Administrator in the Division of Public Safety and Resource Protection for Wisconsin DNR. We want to thank our team today for helping us out. Our producers are Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod. Our technical directors are Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm in for Larry Mueller this week. I'm the executive director. Please join us tomorrow on Garden Talk. We're going to be looking at creating bird-friendly gardens. I think we all like to see birds in our garden. And then we're going to talk about ground cover. It has become a long way in the past few years. We really appreciate you being with us today, and hopefully you can tune in again tomorrow. Thanks.